Hi, welcome to the Grossdami Summary of Dopamine Nation by Dr. Anna Lemke. This book explains how to break bad habits using the neuroscience of dopamine, the so-called pleasure molecule in our brains. So if you want to retrain your brain to enjoy doing hard things, then Dr. Anna Lemke will share tools here that may help you, like dopamine fasting, self-binding, truth-telling, and leaning into pain. Taking a quick look at the online reviews for this book, on Amazon, Dopamine Nation has 4.6 stars, and on Goodreads, it has 3.9 stars. There were many positive reviews who said the book helped them to understand dopamine and understand how to better control themselves in an overstimulating world. But there were some critical reviewers who felt there was too much social commentary that seemed puritanical or judgmental, and too much emphasis on cold turkey abstinence. So, have you ever found yourself lost in the endless scroll of social media, your thumb moving up and down mechanically as you consumed a never-ending feed of posts, photos, or videos? I'm sure we've all been there. Or maybe you've spent an entire day binge-watching a series on Netflix, the hours slipping by with episode after episode of your new favorite show. Or perhaps you've even fallen down the rabbit hole of an immersive video game, losing all sense of time as you try to level up and finish the next mission. In all those situations, what was motivating you to keep going was the effect of dopamine in your brain. What is dopamine? Well, dopamine is often called the molecule of want and desire. It's a neurotransmitter in our brains, which means it allows our neurons to communicate with each other. Most importantly, dopamine is part of the reward system in our brain. It's what motivates us to do stuff, to do anything. Here's how dopamine works. Evolution designed our brains to reward us for anything that would increase our chances of survival and reproduction, like having food and making love. That's why eating a delicious steak feels so pleasurable. Well, dopamine is actually necessary for us to feel a healthy drive and motivation in life. For example, in one study, mice were genetically engineered so their brains could not produce dopamine, and as a result, they lost all motivation to do anything. They wouldn't even try to find food to avoid starvation. However, the problem is that in today's digital society, we're constantly bombarded with too much high dopamine stimulation, leading to compulsive overconsumption. And that includes the social media algorithms, lots of cheap fast food options, and free internet adult videos, which are all designed to stimulate us endlessly and to create a craving for more. So what is all that doing to our drive and motivation? All those high dopamine stimulations. Well, I'm sure we've all had that experience of wanting to get something important done, like a final exam or work project, but then we kept getting pulled into procrastination, like checking social media for the 100th time. When it comes to compulsively consuming food, did you know for the first time in human history, more people in the world are obese than underweight? And later on, we'll talk more about the damaging effects of adult websites. And those are just three examples of how high dopamine stimulation affects us in the modern age. So Dr. Anna Lemke wrote this book, Dopamine Nation, to help us understand how dopamine works so that we can take back control of our lives. So I've read this book of over 300 pages and made this summary to help you explore some of the most important lessons together. By the end of this, you'll understand how to change your brain to enjoy doing hard things more, especially by a process she calls dopamine fasting. So if that sounds interesting, then let's begin. So very quickly about the author. Anna Lemke is a medical doctor. She's a professor of psychiatry at Stanford University School of Medicine, and she has over 20 years of experience as a psychiatrist, and she's also the chief of the Stanford Addiction Medicine Dual Diagnosis Clinic. and she's also published over 100 peer-reviewed scientific papers in prestigious journals. So exactly the type of person you'd want to be learning neuroscience from. So the first lesson from this book is, number one, the pleasure-pain balance. Pursuing pleasure can, ironically, lead to decreased sensitivity to pleasure and more to pain in our lives. So I want you to imagine that you won a contest that was held by a fast food restaurant. And the prize was that every day for the rest of your life, you could eat free hamburgers, pizza, and ice cream for life. Well, that sounds pretty great in the beginning, but after 1 week of this new diet, you visited a friend for dinner, and your friend has cooked a delicious meal of steamed brown rice and broccoli and vegetables. But despite that food being nutritious and well-prepared, it seems to be bland and tasteless to you. But now imagine this, that you went camping, and you got lost in the woods, and you were starving in the wilderness for 1 week. Then you were rescued, and you were given that same meal of rice and vegetables. Well, this time the broccoli would taste incredible, and we would savor every bite. So what's the bottom line here? Pleasure is relative. It often depends on the contrast with what we are used to, which is what neuroscientists call our dopamine baseline. So I want to share with you five concepts from this book that are critical for understanding how to control our dopamine baseline. The first concept is called homeostasis, and here's what it means. Pleasure and pain work like a balance because they're located in similar areas of our brain. And that means when we push down on the pleasure side of the balance in our brain, like when we watch a funny cat video online, well then afterwards our brain wants to correct the balance, and so for a short time, our brain temporarily becomes tilted to the other side of pain. In other words, pleasure has short-term cost. So this is part of what's called homeostasis. Our body has processes of maintaining balance or stability in many different ways. For example, when we feel hot, then our body sweats. But when we feel cold, then our body shivers and shakes because it's always trying to maintain the same internal temperature. Well, the same thing happens to this pleasure-pain balance. When our dopamine levels peak, due to being highly stimulated by food or drugs or arousal, etc., well, then there's an opposite reaction of pain. So the second concept that we should know is called tolerance. This means with repeated exposure to high dopamine stimulation, our threshold for feeling pleasure goes up. And that means we need larger and larger doses to get the same satisfaction. Scientists call this process habituation. And I'm sure we've all seen this process of tolerance happening in real life, with people who often drink alcohol needing to consume a lot more of it to get drunk. Well, the same thing happens with most things that stimulate high dopamine. If we expose ourselves to it repeatedly, we're going to need higher and higher doses to get the same level of pleasure. The neuroscientist Nora Velko actually found that brains of drug addicts have decreased dopamine transmission compared to non-drug users, even 2 weeks after they have not been using any drugs. Now, one of my favorite science books ever is called Behave by Robert Sapolsky, and it's on how the human brain works, and it's written by this biologist and also a professor at Stanford. Now, he wrote a section of that book on dopamine and habituation. He said, quote, "Our frequent human tragedy is that the more we consume, the hungrier we get, more and faster and stronger. What was an unexpected pleasure yesterday is what we feel entitled to today, and what won't be enough tomorrow," end quote. Can read more from him in our summary of his book Behave by Robert Sapolsky on growth.me. Now let's move on to the third concept in this first lesson, and the third one is called addiction. So often we do feel empty and kind of restless after indulging in pleasure, in a craving, because of that pain-pleasure balance that we talked about. The good news is that if we simply wait, then our balance will return to normal on its own. But many of us, many people, try to escape that temporary pain after pleasure with more hits of dopamine. And trying to escape the pain that way is really one of the ways people often fall into addictions. Because when we repeatedly try to stimulate dopamine, that can lead to a state called anhedonia, which is an inability to experience pleasure. And that's where only something that is extremely highly stimulating can bring us pleasure. To put it a different way, this is something I've heard from another popular online neuroscientist called Andrew Huberman. He said, quote, "Addiction is a progressive narrowing of the things that give you pleasure," end quote. So if you're interested in psychology or neuroscience or even brain supplements for brain health, check out Andrew Huberman, who's also a professor at Stanford, funny enough, and he has a great podcast and YouTube channel. Okay, moving on to the fourth concept that you should be familiar with. It is variable rewards. So what does this mean? Well, it turns out that actions that lead to unpredictable rewards are more addicting than those actions that provide us stable rewards. And this is the opposite of what we would expect. But the famous scientist Pavlov, who did those experiments with dogs and ringing bells to make them drool, well, he also did another experiment with mice. And he found that mice worked more enthusiastically pushing a lever for food when the reward of food was made to be unpredictable rather than when they received a stable reward. And this is probably why gambling can be so addicting. It's because it has variability in that reward, some randomness, and that provides us with the feeling of excitement and anticipation and uncertainty. I mean, how fun would slot machines in the casinos be if people knew that they would win every 10th time they pulled the lever? Well, probably nobody would want to play. And this idea may also contribute to or explain the addictiveness of social media. See, social media is a combination of really positive emotions and also negative emotions. Things that we're bored by, or things that even make us feel upset or a little outraged. So most of the time, we don't get a big dopamine reward, but occasionally when we scroll social media, we're hit with something that is very entertaining or stimulating. And the memory of those unpredictable rewards makes us keep on scrolling to get that next little nugget of dopamine, even if a lot of the other time we're just kind of bored and scrolling or even a little upset. Okay, the final concept is number five, called novelty. Novelty is another major driver of dopamine. Novelty is why we tend to visit apps and sites that always have something new on the front page, like social media with the algorithms that constantly update what we see, or news websites. Novelty is also a large reason why many people have a problem with compulsive watching of online adult videos, which offer endless novelty and variety. In fact, did you know that 3 out of the top 20 websites in the world, that the most visited websites, they're related to adult content? Some of them are more popular than Amazon and Netflix. That blew my mind when I heard that. But more experts are beginning to discuss the negative impacts on real-world relationships that can occur from overconsumption of adult videos. Just like eating ice cream every day would make a healthy apple seem tasteless or bland, I think the most popular book on the science of this topic is probably Your Brain on Porn by Gary Wilson. And he wrote in that book, quote, "The goal now is to seek your pleasure from interacting with real people, without a screen between you, and to awaken your appetite for life and love," end quote. So check out his book if you want more specific information on dopamine and in this area. So that was a big lesson one from this book with a lot of little subparts. But now let's start, I'll quickly summarize it for you. Here's what lesson one is. In our brains, pleasure and pain work like a balance through a process called homeostasis. So when we tip the balance by indulging in something very pleasurable, like social media, junk food, or adult videos, well then afterwards, there is a type of pain that comes. It could be like a feeling of little emptiness or restlessness or craving for more, so we keep scrolling. Also, with repeated exposure to high dopamine stimulation, our threshold for feeling pleasure increases, which is called tolerance. Fewer things have the ability to give us pleasure. So now let's move on to lesson two, which is the 30-day dopamine fast. Abstaining from a compulsive habit for 1 month is the first step to taking back control of our lives. So I want you to imagine Sarah. Sarah is a 20-year-old college student. She's an aspiring lawyer with short brown hair that loves playing soccer. So in college, she began using cannabis casually on the weekends with friends, feeling it was no big deal. But as the school year went on and the demands of her life increased, she began using it more often to manage her anxiety and to unwind after stressful days. Unfortunately, this habit began to impact her study habits, leading to a decline in grades, and her stress began to go up more, and so she began smoking more, and it was a bad spiral. Sarah knew that something had to change, so after a few months, she went for help with this problem to a school counselor, and the counselor advised her to quit the cannabis for 30 days and to see what happens. At first, Sarah resisted this suggestion, but then she was reminded by her long-term ambitions of becoming a lawyer, and she realized that she did want to eventually not have this be a problem, so she decided to try quitting for a month. And by the way, Dr. Anna Lemke says one of the most useful clinical tools in breaking bad habits and addictions, to get people motivated to do that, is a long-term perspective. And that means asking, how do you want your life to look like in 3, 5, or 10 years? So Sarah is a fictional character that I made up, but she does closely resemble a few of the real-life stories that are in Dopamine Nation, the stories of young people who came to Dr. Lemke's office seeking help with various issues, including cannabis. So Sarah's story is like a classic situation when Dr. Anna Lemke would recommend doing a 30-day dopamine fast. And online, people called these kind of practices like dopamine detox also, which you may have heard of. So here's Dr. Lemke's ideas for how to do dopamine fasting step by step. So step one is to abstain for 30 days. Whatever it is that you're doing compulsively, that you don't want to be doing anymore, commit to a 30-day break. You can imagine you're doing a scientific experiment on yourself with the goal of seeing what effects this would have. Dr. Lemke says, the first 2 weeks of this dopamine fast usually will make you feel worse. It's almost like you're experiencing a withdrawal, like a very mild version of what happens with people who are addicted to drugs. But after 4 weeks, you'll usually feel much better, and you'll have a lot of new insights and clarity on how that high dopamine activity was affecting you. So what is this practice based on? Mainly, it's based on her experience, 20 years of treating patients in her clinic. And there is a little bit of science to support this too. For example, there was a study by Mark Schuchat on alcoholic men who were clinically depressed. And he found that after 4 weeks of abstinence, 80% of those alcoholic men no longer met the criteria for depression. So that's significantly better than what most treatments for depression would give them, including most of the medications and therapies. But there is a note of caution here. For those people who are severely addicted to substances like drugs or alcohol, there are risks of biological or biochemical withdrawal in the body. So in those situations, quitting with the help of professional supervision seems to be the way to go. That's what Dr. Lemke recommends. Okay, so step two of this dopamine fast is to endure the boredom. So this is what you should expect. It's normal to feel a large amount of boredom and even anxiety and stress when a major source of our dopamine is removed. We'll have a strong desire to divert our attention elsewhere, like to another source of dopamine, social media, or a sugary snack. Throughout this book, the author discusses one of her own compulsions. She talks about how her hobby of reading romance novels slowly turned into this mild addiction to reading highly erotic stories, and then she began reading them later and later into the night, and it began interfering with her life and her work and her family life. And when she decided to take a break from this mild addiction or bad habit for 30 days, she was surprised at her strong feelings of restlessness and frustration of when she would usually pick up one of those books. But rather than escaping those painful feelings to a different habit, Dr. Lemke says we can find relief by escaping into the world. That means feeling what we feel inside, almost like mindfulness. We can also connect with others around us, and we can also find what needs to be done in our environment. Like, what do we need to take care of in our home, or what hasn't been done yet that we need to do? And that last piece of advice reminds me of what the famous clinical psychologist and professor Jordan Peterson sometimes says. In his book, The 12 Rules for Life, Dr. Peterson often advises young people to begin improving their lives by starting with a very small achievable task like cleaning your room. Why? Well, because after we've done something small, like cleaning our room or even cleaning a shelf, then that brings us a sense of accomplishment and confidence. We see that we can transform one part of reality from chaos into order, and that allows us to venture forth into larger and larger problems, almost like being a brave hero in a mythical story, and eventually we can work our way up to conquering the large dragons in our lives, those big problems that we're more scared to face. You can read more of his advice in our summary of his book 12 Rules for Life by Jordan Peterson on growth.me. So the third step we'll talk about in this fast is to return to balance. So it's returning to balance. So after we've completed those 30 days, we should have some new clarity about how the compulsion was affecting our lives. And this time will be the best to decide what a healthy balance means to us, because we've escaped the grips of the bad habit. Now, most people do want to return to doing the high dopamine activity, whether it was playing video games or eating donuts or whatever it was. But usually people want a lot less usage of that thing and more moderation. For example, maybe before the dopamine fast, someone was playing video games for many hours every day, but after they complete the fast, they decide they only want to play them with other people as part of socializing, or perhaps on the weekends, etc. However, complete abstinence, may be the approach that works best for some types of people or some types of addictions. That is what Alcoholics Anonymous recommends to all its members, so it probably has some merit too. Now, I want to connect this to another book called Deep Work by Cal Newport. So he's a computer science professor and author of several popular books on effective studying and working. So in his book Deep Work, Cal Newport argues that the most important skill for future success in the future is our ability to concentrate deeply on one thing for extended periods of time. And the good news is, he believes that ability can be trained and improved through consistent practice, much like working out in a gym can grow our muscles. So the most important thing for developing that deep focus that will be so valuable to our work and learning is to avoid distractions. such as social media, for longer and longer periods of time. Cal Newport wrote, efforts to deepen your focus will struggle if you don't simultaneously wean your mind from a dependence on distraction, end quote. So one practical way we can do that is by scheduling specific times during the day when we're going to be indulging in those distractions, like browsing the internet aimlessly or checking social media. By planning our breaks in advance, we can then resist the urge. So you can learn more productivity hacks in our summary of the book Deep Work by Cal Newport on growth.me. But let's summarize lesson two very quickly. To break compulsive habits of high dopamine activities such as cannabis, adult videos, video games, junk food, etc., then Dr. Lemke always very often recommends a 30-day dopamine fast. And that means abstaining from that habit for a month. It'll be very challenging, especially as the first 2 weeks will bring boredom and frustration. However, after the 4 weeks, you'll probably feel much better and have a clear understanding of how the habit was impacting you. Next, we have lesson three, lean into pain. Restoring our dopamine balance involves embracing discomfort through cold water, exercise, fasting, etc. So I want you to imagine walking into your favorite cafe and smelling freshly baked chocolate brownies, warm chewy cookies, and a large tray of soft glazed donuts. Your mouth waters as you look at those large trays filled with sweet treats and you order a few of them, and then you sit down and devour them one by one, not stopping until all that's left is an empty table covered with cookie crumbs. But after a few minutes, that sugar rush begins fading, and it's replaced by a feeling of sickness and kind of regret. You wish you could go back in time and eat a little less. And as you leave the cafe, you promise to make healthier choices in the future, but you know the temptation will return. I'm sure we've all had that experience of overindulging in pleasure and then feeling worse afterwards. Well, as it turns out, the opposite is also true. If we experience something that's a little painful, like a cold shower, then afterwards, life can feel more pleasurable. And Dr. Anna Lemke calls this the pain paradox. And so we can actually use pain to increase our experiences of pleasure. So here are some ways that we can use pain to make our lives more joyful, healthy, and balanced. The first way is cold water immersion. Taking cold showers or even ice baths can have a positive impact on our bodies and minds. Studies have shown that these can help boost circulation, reduce inflammation, and even improve mood. Dopamine Nation highlights one study by Prague University that found 1 hour of cold water immersion led to a 250% increase in plasma dopamine levels. And there was one specific story in this book of one of Dr. Lemke's patients who was a millionaire real estate professional recovering from an addiction to cocaine. He found great benefits in taking daily freezing ice baths. And so that goes to show a short period of high discomfort can lead to feeling great all day long afterwards. And while this may have seemed like a crazy thing to do maybe 15 years ago, it's become kind of a trend in self-help led by people like Wim Hof, who talk a lot about this kind of cold water immersion. So the second way is exercise. So it can also feel kind of uncomfortable to begin a workout. A lot of people don't really like starting workouts. But once we get going, then it can feel really good. And exercise provides a beneficial level of stress on our bodies. As a result, we afterwards grow healthier and stronger. Dr. Lemke goes so as far as to say that for our mood and energy, exercise is better than, quote, any pill I can prescribe, end quote. In fact, some people get so much from exercise that it can become an addiction in itself. Like one of the author's patients who kept running even after her leg bones fractured from so much exercise. So obviously in that story, it has gone way too far, and Dr. Lemke had to treat that patient in a way that got her to exercise much less. So we can get addicted to exercise too. Okay, the next way is through fasting. So a recent big trend has been intermittent fasting, which is depriving our body of food for periods of time, like half the day. So what does intermittent fasting look like? Well, it's often simply skipping breakfast or not eating after 5 a.m. or perhaps fasting for two full days of the week. Just lengthening the amount of time in our lives that we go without eating. Dr. Lemke points out that not too long ago, that kind of behavior may have been labeled an eating disorder, but today, scientists increasingly recognizing the great benefits in fasting, including for living longer. And in fact, many religions for thousands of years have been recommending fasting. Okay, the final way is number four, exposure therapy. So if someone is feeling anxiety in their lives, then the gold standard treatment in psychotherapy for them, it involves exposure. Gradual exposure to the thing that someone is afraid of or the thing that makes them uncomfortable. Why? Because through repeated voluntary exposure to something that we fear, there becomes less activation in the fear center of our brain called the amygdala. So this is just another example of pain being the doorway to mental well-being. So I'm going to connect this to another book called Lifespan by David Sinclair. It's about living longer. So if you want to live longer, then one of the most important words that you should know from science is hormesis. Hormesis is the name for a beneficial level of biological stress, which means a level of stress that's not too much that it harms us and not too little that we can't really feel anything. For example, doing intermittent fasting or some calorie restriction, that appears to provide health benefits because it's kind of a middle level of stress on our bodies. But what would happen if we stopped eating food completely for weeks at a time? Well, that would be an extreme level of stress, and that deprivation would cause our body to degrade. And on the other hand, if we ate too much, then our health would also decline. So it's kind of like the middle balance. So in that book, Lifespan, which was written by David Sinclair, he's a professor of genetics at Harvard Medical School and co-director of their Center for Aging Research. So he wrote, quote, "There are plenty of stressors that will activate longevity genes without damaging the cell, including certain types of exercise, intermittent fasting, low protein diets, and exposure to hot and cold temperatures. That's called hormesis," end quote. So isn't it great to know that most of these practices of embracing pain can make us feel better through dopamine, but they can also help us live longer? That is so great. And you can learn more about living longer in our summary of the book Lifespan by David Sinclair. So let's summarize lesson number three. The pain paradox says that embracing pain and discomfort may be the key to restoring balance in our dopamine and pleasure centers of our brain. There are many physical and mental health benefits to hormesis, which is a beneficial level of biological stress. And we can get hormesis through practices like intermittent fasting, exercise, and cold water immersion. So next is lesson four, self-binding. This is about creating an environment and rules that help us stick to good habits without needing willpower or discipline. Do you remember your New Year's resolutions from January 1st? As we begin each new year, many of us set those big goals to improve ourselves, such as by losing weight or reading more books or starting a new business or side hustle. But as time goes on, as the weeks go on, we often struggle to stick to those new habits, especially during times of stress or difficulty, when we're faced with the first major challenges in the year at work or in our relationships, or with major life changes, then our willpower often fails and we revert to those familiar bad habits because they bring us comfort. And so by February, many of us end up binging on that chocolate ice cream and those Netflix cartoons that we had sworn off. At least, those are the habits that I would be doing. So if that's happened to you, if you've failed in New Year's resolutions, then obviously you're not alone. Most of us have. But what if there was a more effective way to stick to our good intentions, a way that does not rely solely on sheer willpower and self-discipline? Well, enter self-binding. This is a powerful tool that can help us stick to good habits by shaping our environment and having rules around our behaviors. Self-binding is based on recognizing and accepting our inherent human weaknesses. So here are three of the self-binding methods that we can use to avoid relapses to high dopamine habits and addictions, and these three methods are talked about in this book. The first method is to create physical barriers. This is about making it more difficult for us to access those high dopamine behaviors that we're kind of addicted to. For example, most of the big dopamine detox videos on YouTube seem to recommend deleting the apps that we don't want to be tempted in using. And that makes sense if Instagram or if TikTok are not on our phones and sending us notifications, then we're far less likely to get sucked into them. In Dopamine Nation, Dr. Lemke also shares another example, the story of an alcoholic man who would keep the wine in his home locked up in a safe, and only his wife had the key. So then he wasn't even really tempted to ever drink. Now, I want to connect this to another book. Perhaps the best-selling self-help book of the last few years is called Atomic Habits by James Clear. And he recommends making bad habits more difficult, just like this book, but he also says that we should make our good habits easier, the things that we want to do, we should make it quicker and easier to get started. For example, if we want to have a positive new habit of jogging in the morning, then we should prepare our environment the night before. So we could get the running shoes and our clothes ready right beside our bed, so when we wake up, we don't need to even think about it. We just have our clothes there and we get up and get out the door. So that's about making our good desired habits easier to do. And by the way, don't feel too bad if you miss one day. Just make sure you get back to doing the good habit as soon as you can. As James Clear wrote in his book, every action you take is a vote for the person you wish to become, end quote. And if you want to learn more from him, go check out our summary of his best-selling book, Atomic Habits by James Clear. Okay, back to Dopamine Nation. The second method of self-binding is to set time limits. It's much easier to moderate our consumption of a high dopamine thing if we limit the time we're allowed to consume it. For example, in one experiment, rats that were given access to cocaine for just 1 hour a day were able to moderate their usage and to consume steady amounts of it daily. On the other hand, rats given unlimited access to the cocaine simply kept consuming it until their death. And here's a practical real-life example I can give you. For many years, I've had a weekly cheat meal, and that's just a few hours of time per week when I can eat more junk food, like having some ice cream or even hamburger. And by setting aside 5% of my week for some indulgence, it makes it a lot easier to eat really healthy the other 95% of the time, such as by drinking green smoothies almost every day. Okay, the third method of self-binding is to avoid subtle triggers. For many addictions, small temptations can lead to a surge in cravings that can then lead to major relapse and even binges. Therefore, it can make a lot of sense for us to avoid even small things that may stimulate our cravings. This is for some types of people in addictions. One of the most striking stories in Dopamine Nation is an engineer in his 60s who has a severe addiction to adult videos. He even builds these homemade machines to aid him in watching these videos for several hours per day. So after months in recovery from that addiction, the engineer relapsed after seeing a nude woman on a hotel television set. And after that failure, the man learned that he should avoid even small triggers related to his addiction, such as seeing women's volleyball games on TV, and even his own body in the bathroom mirror. So to most of us, those kinds of rules may sound puritanical, to cover up our own body in front of the mirror, and it may sound extreme. But in that some situations of addiction, it gave that engineer some freedom from his addiction, and 1 year later, Dr. Lemke said, he looked much better and healthier. So the third way is to avoid even subtle triggers around our bad habits and addictions. So let's summarize lesson four now. Many of us begin our goals with great enthusiasm, such as the new year, but eventually our willpower fails. It usually does. Well, self-binding is a method to help us avoid relapsing to those bad habits through the power of shaping our environment and following behavioral rules. The first way is to create physical barriers between yourself and the habit, like deleting the social media apps. Another way is to set specific time limits for usage of the thing. And a third way is to avoid small triggers that may lead to relapse. And our final lesson from this book is number five, shame and honesty. This is about overcoming addictions with unexpected tools like shame and honesty that can foster social connection. So I want you to picture a 35-year-old man named Joseph who's happily married, has two young children that he loves, and he's always been hardworking and ambitious. However, he loves to party and dance to electronic music too. Work hard, play hard has always been his mantra. But one night, Joseph is offered some cocaine by a friend of a friend, and he decides to try it because, well, why not? All these people, other people are, and he didn't see harm in it and didn't think he was the type of person who could get easily addicted by trying it one time. But he tries it after a few more parties, and then he finds that it helps him to work, and then a few months later, Joseph finds himself sneaking away to the washroom at work all the time so he can take quick hits of cocaine. And he's spending more and more of his paycheck to buy the drug, and he'd even secretly missed his last two car payments because of this addiction. So one day, Joseph breaks down and tells his wife about his growing problem. At first, she cannot believe it, but then she gets very angry. She yells at Joseph and calls him a bad person, and tells him to get out of the house and to stay away from her children. Well, Joseph leaves feeling the worst he's ever felt, and to find relief, he reaches for that stash of cocaine under his car seat. Well, that story is a classic example of what Dr. Lemke would call a cycle of destructive shame. It's when we reach out for support to other people, and then they shame us with rejection, and that usually leads our addictions to strengthen. However, there's a different type of shame that is called pro-social shame, which is based on radical honesty, and it can actually help us to get better and to stay better. So here are four ways that radical honesty and pro-social shame can help us. Number one way is by overcoming denial. When we're caught in the grip of an addiction or compulsive bad habit, many of us are not really aware of the extent of the problem, but by speaking to another person with radical honesty, that can provide a mirror by which we can see ourselves clearly for the first time. For example, Dr. Lemke first became truly aware of her addiction to erotic novels while she was doing this exercise in class, demonstrating a therapy technique with a student, and the technique was with asking the other person questions about what they would want to change in their lives. So this is a major reason why therapy is useful to many people. Simply having another person that we can talk to and listen to us without judgment so that we can learn how we really feel about things. And there's also some science to support the idea that being honest can also boost activity in the part of our brain called the prefrontal cortex, which is the part that helps us to plan long-term and to resist impulses. And maybe that's a hidden benefit or the reason why so many religions in the world put so much emphasis on telling the truth. Okay, here's a second way that honesty and shame can help us. It's by creating connection. Usually we assume that other people will reject us if we admit flaws about ourselves, but usually the opposite happens. Admitting our human weaknesses makes others feel closer to us. It creates those real, intimate connections that we crave. And building a strong network of social support is very important for helping us to get out of addictions and even bad habits. Now, one of the best books on trauma is called The Body Keeps the Score by Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, who's a renowned professor who's published over 150 papers in science journals. And he explains that most of the tools that they use to help people overcome trauma in his center are based on helping them to feel safe and relaxed in relationships. Specifically, that book says, quote, "Being able to feel safe with other people is probably the single most important aspect of mental health. Safe connections are fundamental to meaningful and satisfying lives," end quote. And to achieve that end, professional therapists may use a wide variety of approaches, including group therapy and even mindfulness tools and yoga practices and neurofeedback machines and things like eye movement therapy and more. You can learn all about those and the details of what those are about in our summary of his book, The Body Keeps the Score, by Dr. Bessel van der Kolk on growth.me. Okay, the third part of this lesson is taking responsibility. So for healing and recovery to really occur, Dr. Anna Lemke says that her patients must take on responsibility and accountability for their situation. Even if their situation was not their fault, they must see they have the power to choose their response to that situation and problem today. Unfortunately, she says many professionals nowadays cause their patients to become disempowered and trapped by reinforcing a victim story. It's a misguided attempt in being empathetic. Okay, and the fourth part of this lesson is making amends. So the way that Alcoholics Anonymous works is that when members relapse in their addiction, they must admit their mistake to the group. But then, instead of being shamed or rejected, they're instead given acceptance and belonging, and that's the key. And then they're given specific steps to correct their behavior in the future and to make amends for any wrongs that they did while under the influence. And this is one of the key parts that makes the 12-step program so powerful and effective. They harness shame in a positive way. Because members admit their relapses to others and they feel kind of shame about it, but then they're given acceptance and steps to make amends, then they feel a strong motivation not to relapse because they don't want to disappoint the other group members. Okay, I'm going to summarize the final lesson here. Pro-social shame is a type of shame that can help people overcome addictions. It involves telling the truth, being accepted by others, and then taking steps to make amends for past transgressions. And now radical honesty with others about our weaknesses allows us to overcome denial, to build real connections, and take responsibility for making better decisions going forward. Okay, that's all for this summary, and now just to final thing is some step-by-step suggestions on how we can apply this book to our lives. Number one is we can stop using a source of high dopamine for 30 days. So this is the biggest actionable tool in this book, the 30-day dopamine fast. By taking a break for 1 month from a source of dopamine, we'll gain clarity about how it's affecting us and probably reset our dopamine transmission and baseline. The second suggested action step is to add cold water to the end of your shower. So the easiest way to do this is to simply end one of our warm showers with 1 or 2 minutes of cold water by lowering the temperature gradually. Remember, the aim here is to push down on the pain side of that balance so that we can increase our sensitivity to pleasure. And the third final action step is to set a daily time limit for your biggest distractions. So I guess the biggest problem with digital distractions like social media is that often we say we're going to take a 5-minute break, but that easily slides into a 2-hour-long scrolling session because of how addicting those algorithms are designed to be. But we can set hard limits on our devices, and there are many built-in features to do this. Like on iPhones and Macs, there's a thing called screen time, so you can look up and set a hard limit for your biggest digital distraction. On Android, it's called Digital Wellbeing, and on Windows, there's the Family Safety app. So choose your three biggest digital distractions, apps or websites, whatever it is, and then choose a daily time limit that you will try for the next 30 days for each one of those distractions. Okay, I hope you enjoyed this one, and I'll see you in the next one.